Right. Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. We're diving into a case today that, well, it's a bit of a heavy one, but oh, so important. A Texas Supreme Court case, Texas Employers Insurance Association versus Haywood, decided back in 1954.
Yeah, 1954, quite a while ago. And, you know, for our law students out there, and I know there's a lot of you listening, this case is, well, it's foundational. It's really foundational when we talk about this idea of incurable error in the law. And it really hits on this crucial need for absolute fairness in our trials. You know, I mean, that's what we're all about, right? Yeah. Justice and fairness.
Absolutely. I mean, we're talking about like the ethical lines that attorneys just can't cross and the duty of the court to kind of step in and make things right, even when no one, you know, officially objects in the moment.
Exactly. And I think what makes this case so fascinating, so compelling, is that it's not just a historical thing. You know, the principles that came out of Haywood, they still echo, they still resonate today in how we understand how trials should work, you know, procedure, and even the limits of how lawyers can argue their cases.
For sure.
So yeah, our mission today in this deep dive, I guess you could say, is to really pull out those core legal principles, those nuggets of wisdom that this case gave us.
Right.
And especially we're gonna focus on what makes an argument, you know, in court so messed up, so wrong that you don't even need that immediate objection.
Right, like the normal rules kind of go out the window.
Exactly, yeah. It's that bad.
Okay. So let's set the stage here. You know, paint a picture for everyone listening. We have a black plaintiff, Mr. Haywood, who filed a workers' compensation claim. He's saying, hey, I'm totally and permanently disabled because of my work. And he's going up against, you know, this big insurance company, Texas Employers Insurance Association. Seems pretty standard, pretty run-of-the-mill workers' comp case, right?
Right. At first glance, you might think so.
Yes.
But here's where things take a really dark turn, I would say. The defense, the lawyers for the insurance company, they bring in two black witnesses
yep.
to try and counter Mr. Haywood's claims that he's, you know, completely disabled. So far, so good.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like just presenting evidence. Yeah.
Right, but then during those closing arguments, the part where the lawyers really get to, you know, sum everything up for the jury, Mr. Haywood's own attorney, the guy supposed to be representing him, he decides to attack those defense witnesses. And the way he does it, well, let's just say it was beyond offensive.
Beyond offensive. I mean, we're talking about reportedly using just horrific, absolutely horrific racial slurs
yeah.
to describe these witnesses.
Yeah.
Yellow darkies, or even some sources say yellow nigs. I mean, just let those words sink in for a minute. It's awful.
Yeah.
And the point wasn't to disagree with the facts, you know, what they were saying. It was just to make the jury think that these people, these witnesses, couldn't be trusted because of their race.
Mm.
Just a blatant appeal to prejudice, right?
Absolutely. I mean, can you imagine, right, being one of those witnesses?
Yeah.
You're there to tell the truth, and suddenly you're being attacked, not for what you're saying, but for who you are.
Right.
And the whole atmosphere of the trial, I mean, it's instantly poisoned. The jury's now hearing this, you know, this horrible language. It's almost like they're being told, hey, don't believe these people. They're less trustworthy just because of the color of their skin.
Yeah, I mean, it just creates this cloud of suspicion
right.
that has nothing to do with the evidence or anything relevant to the case.
Exactly. And here's this really important point, something that's going to become central to what the Texas Supreme Court eventually decides. The defense attorneys, the ones representing the insurance company, they didn't object right then and there when those slurs were used.
Okay, so that's interesting, right? Because, like, first year law school, we learned you've got to object, you know, if something's wrong.
Right. Timely objection, preserve the issue for appeal.
Yeah, it's like the golden rule of procedure.
So why didn't they object? I mean, was it just like they were stunned? They didn't know what to do?
We can't know for sure what was going through their minds at that moment, but whatever the reason, that lack of objection, it becomes a huge part of this case.
Okay, so the jury, they hear all this, and they end up siding with Mr. Haywood. You'd think, okay, case closed, right? Plaintiff wins.
You would think so.
Hmm.
But the defense, they weren't done.
Even though they didn't object during the trial, they file this motion after the verdict, basically saying, hey, we need a new trial. And their main argument, that inflammatory language, those awful slurs used by Haywood's own lawyer.
Okay, so this is where the Texas Supreme Court steps in.
Right.
And with all this crazy context, the racial slurs, the lack of an objection, it all boils down to this really big legal question for the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Could those insults, could they be considered what we call incurable error, meaning Was the prejudice, you know, baked into those words, was it so deep, so powerful that the verdict just couldn't stand even though the defense didn't object right away?
That's the core issue.
Yeah.
Can you fix that kind of damage, or is it just too much?
I mean, for our law student listeners, this case, this Haywood case, that's a textbook example of this idea that sometimes, you know, even if you mess up procedurally, sometimes fairness, it trumps those technicalities.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, the general rule, like we said, is you got to object right away so the judge can fix things. But Haywood, it's this exception. It's saying, hey, some errors, they're just so fundamentally unfair, so damaging, that they completely undermine the whole point of a fair trial. And you can't just fix that with a little instruction from the judge, you know, like, oh, disregard what you just heard.
Right. Some things you just can't unhear.
Exactly. It's like trying to put toothpaste back in the tube. Once it's out there, it's out there.
So what did the Texas Supreme Court say? I mean, what was their decision?
Well, they were pretty clear. They said, yes, these arguments, they absolutely constitute incurable error. Straight up, they overturned the lower court's decision, basically saying, nope, got to have a new trial. And that's a pretty big deal.
Right. Especially when you consider that no one objected at the time.
Exactly. So to really understand how big of a deal this was, we gotta break down the legal test the court used. They were asking, was the argument reasonably calculated to cause such prejudice to the opposing litigant that a withdrawal by counsel or an instruction by the court or both could not eliminate the probability that it resulted in an improper verdict?
Okay, that's a mouthful. Let's unpack that a little bit.
All right.
Reasonably calculated to cause such prejudice. So
yeah.
So we're not just talking about an argument that's like, you know, mean-spirited or rude. It has to be something that would likely actually influence the jury's decision in an unfair way.
That's it. It's not just about being uncivil. It's about swaying the jury based on something that's not relevant to the facts of the case.
Right. Like playing on their emotions or their biases instead of, you know, focusing on the evidence.
Right. And the second part of that test, the part about withdrawal by counsel or instruction by the court not being enough to fix the problem, that's huge.
Yeah.
It means that the damage done by that statement, those slurs, it's so deep, so profound, that even if the lawyer took it back or the judge told the jury to ignore it, you still couldn't be sure that the verdict would be fair.
Right. Right. It's like the taint is just, it's just there.
Yeah.
And the court was super clear about why they saw this racial bias as falling into this extreme category, this incurable error category.
Yeah.
They said, and this is a quote, race and color are a matter of indifference in judging credibility. I mean, just think about that for a second.
Wow.
It gets right to the heart of what our justice system should be, you know, impartial, fair. You shouldn't be judged on your truthfulness based on your race.
It's powerful.
Right. And even today, like, that statement carries so much weight. But then this Haywood case shows us just how far we can stray from that ideal.
Yeah. And the court, they went on to say that this type of argument, using these slurs, it, quote, implants the deepest and most ineradicable type of prejudice.
Wow. I mean, that's some strong language right there.
Yeah, ineradicable. They're basically saying once you plant that seed of racial bias in the minds of the jury, it's almost impossible to get rid of.
Right. And it speaks to just how insidious and long-lasting prejudice can be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now here's a really interesting wrinkle in all of this. Both Mr. Haywood, the plaintiff, and those two witnesses for the defense, they were all black.
Right.
So it wasn't like, you know, one racial group attacking another in the way that we might typically think
What's
about
that classic interracial conflict, right.
Right. But the court still said it was incurable error. Why is that so important? What's the court really saying there?
I think it highlights a really important point. The court was saying that any time you bring race into this kind of argument, it poisons the well. It doesn't matter if everyone involved is the same race. By using those slurs, by focusing on those specific racial characteristics, you're still reinforcing these harmful stereotypes, these damaging ideas about black people. And it distracts from the real issue. It's not about the evidence anymore. It's about these irrelevant, prejudiced ideas.
Right. It's about playing on those biases.
Exactly.
So, okay, zoom out a little bit. Big picture. Why does this Haywood decision still matter today? You know, it's an old case.
Right.
Why should law students in, what is it, 2025 now?
Right.
Why should they still be studying this? What impact did it actually have?
Well, for one thing, Haywood, it really cemented this idea of incurable error. in Texas law, especially when it comes to arguments that try to inject prejudice into the courtroom.
Right.
And, you know, it's not just a Texas thing. You see Haywood cited all over the country, even today, in cases where lawyers are accused of misconduct or making arguments that just cross the line, you know, like too far, too inflammatory. And it's a reminder, a constant reminder to lawyers everywhere, you know, hey, you have ethical responsibilities. You can't just use these inflammatory tactics, these appeals to bias, to try and win your case.
Right, right. Play fair, basically. Stick to the facts.
Exactly.
And it's not just on the lawyers, right? Haywood also shines a light on the role of the judge, you know, the person running the trial. It's not just up to the other lawyer to object. The judge has a duty, you know, to step in and make sure that the trial is fair for everyone, even if no one says anything.
That's a big part of it. The Texas Supreme Court in Haywood, they even quoted from another case to really emphasize this point. They said, and I'm quoting here, "It is not only the province, but the duty of the trial judge, acting on his own volition if necessary, to prevent any such deterioration of judicial dignity."
So the judge has to protect the sanctity of the courtroom.
Right. Can't let things get out of control. Can't let prejudice take over.
Right. I mean, it really goes back to that fundamental idea that trials should be decided on the evidence, on the facts, not on exploiting people's prejudices.
Absolutely. And the court in Haywood, they even went back further. They quoted this even older case that said, and I'm quoting again, "Cases ought to be tried in a court of justice upon the facts proved. And whether a party be Jew or Gentile, white or black, is a matter of indifference."
I mean, that's it, right? That's the core principle.
Yeah. It's about fairness. It's about impartiality. It's about looking at the evidence and nothing else.
Okay. So to wrap this all up, you know, for our law students out there, what's the big takeaway from Texas Employers and Tech in Haywood?
All right. Haywood, it's a landmark case. And it shows us that sometimes, even if you don't follow all the procedural rules perfectly, some errors, especially ones that are about racial prejudice, they're just too big to ignore.
Right.
And even if there's no objection at the time, the court can still step in and say, nope, this verdict can't stand. We need a new trial. And it shows us that our courts, at least in theory, they're committed to making sure that trials are fair and that racial bias has no place in our justice system.
So it's this really interesting tension, right, between following the rules and making sure that justice is done, even when those rules aren't followed perfectly.
Exactly. It's like the court is saying, look, we have rules for a reason. But sometimes those rules, they can't stand in the way of fairness. Some errors are just too big, too poisonous to ignore.
And it makes you think, you know, in today's world, how do we apply this idea of incurable error? How do we make sure that our courts are truly fair, especially with all the complexities of bias that we're more aware of now?
Right. Because bias can be subtle. It can be unconscious. So how do we root that out? How do we make sure that everyone gets a fair shake, regardless of their race, their religion, their background?
Yeah. It's a question that's still very relevant today.
Absolutely. Haywood might be an old case, but the issues it raises, they're as timely as ever.
Food for thought, everyone. Food for thought.
Indeed.
Thanks for joining us for another deep dive.
Always a pleasure.
We'll see you next time.
See you then.